This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. With me is poet Kika Aviles. Here's Kika.
Hello, how you doing? And I will open with a poem that is very dear to me. And it's called Let the Poets Run the Country. I don't know about you, but I say let the poets run the country. We'll be better off with books and pens instead of the misery of weapons. I say let the poets run the country. They'll give out poetic justice and listen to those of us who want to speak. Thinking will be declared the national language. Birds will be allowed to share their wisdom. Cabinet meetings will have new agendas. The truth in Neruda will be discussed. There will be policy analysis on important matters such as love and dignity. I don't know about you, but I say let the poets run the country. We'll have leaders who speak from the heart. People who will not take into account the money of thieves and liars. We will have a country filled with rhymes and justice if for once we let the poets run the country.
That is the voice of Kika Aviles. He's a poet, performer, and his work, as we hear, addresses social issues. Native of El Salvador, graduated from the Duke Ellington School for the Arts, and he's been writing and performing in the U.S. over 20 years in Washington, D.C., in Los Angeles, in San Francisco, Santa Fe, throughout the country. Kika, your journey is a tribute to making a life for poetry because you have taken no prisoners. You have not said, I'm going to do this and poetry on the side. You are a practitioner in the true sense of the word. Would you say that's a good description?
I would say it's a fair description, yes.
What is your story? When did you come to this country?
I came here when I was 15 years old in 1980, right at the height of the civil war in El Salvador, as Ronald Reagan was coming into office. And I'd been writing poetry since I was probably 12. And I just basically started writing cheesy love poems to try to impress girls. But the political situation and being exposed to more social conscious poetry when I came here and getting involved in the political movement to stop the U.S. Meddling and intervention in our conflict in El Salvador led me to explore other things and to kind of try to begin to use my voice, I would say, in a more political manner, and there was this political awakening in me as a teenager, and you know, I was only 15, and then when I went to Duke Ellington School of the Arts for high school, I went into the theater department and realized that there's really not that many roles for Latinos in much of the, you know, plays in traditional theater. So I came to the conclusion that if I wanted to go into this performance and writing thing, that I needed to develop my own voice, that I needed to start writing my own scripts. And that's kind of how things got started for me.
And if we want to change the world, we have to invent it first,
exactly,
the way we want it to be. And so that's what you've been doing. And I see your work. If you lined up all of your poetry end to end across the room, it's really one long song. So let us hear another. Kika Aviles.
Okay, let's do something that I would say is a tribute to all immigrants, and it's called the Immigrant Museum. At the Immigrant Museum, there are accents, language mishaps, dance lessons for people with no rhythm, fake documents, foreign heroes, military medals, gypsies and comadres, mafiosos and compadres. The museum halls offer Polish poetry, German doubts, Mexican colors, Negro insight and essays, Irish midwives. At the Immigrant Museum, there are accents, historic oil drum barrels from the Persian Gulf, replicas of holding cells for aliens from the tropics, a sequential installation on the life of the nanny, morning tasks, washing, drying, folding, ironing, dinner prep, and dinner. The first bilingual robot, confusing translating manuals, primitive art for Western tourists. At the Immigrant Museum, there are accents, Russian vodka, bilingual answering machines, herbal potions, Jesus paintings, Chinese noodles, Vietnamese sandals. The first dream to enter Ellis Islands that wasn't fulfilled. At the Immigrant Museum, there are accents, jubilation, song and prayer, circumcision and baptism, wedding dresses, hard hats, baby bottles, joy dancing in colors, dreams posing as day laborers, hyphens, fear, orgasms, prayer, apprehension, ambivalence. Yes, at the Immigrant Museum, there are accents, there are accents, there are accents.
We're at the Library of Congress with Kika Aviles, and I would say that listening to your work, it is like seeing a collage, so that not only do you write with your lyrical ability, but you're building all the time. It's like building images and juxtaposing artifacts. Are you aware of that? Is that on purpose?
I don't know that I'm aware of it. I think the part of the deal with me is that I've never really written thinking of a reader. I've always wrote my pieces thinking of a listening audience. Mm. I come from, you know, a tradition of performance, and really the bulk of my work, the more and more that I've, you know, thought about it, and the more and more that I've looked at it, and it hasn't been until the last 5 years that I've sat down with, you know, my body of work from over the last 20 years, and I come to realize that I would say that 80% of all of my writing has been written with the thought of an audience, not with the thought of somebody holding a piece of paper and reading the lines. So that I think that there is perhaps that approach to the writing, that I'm thinking about delivery and not necessarily about literary structure.
It works both ways, lucky for you.
Well, I hope
you managed. But it's very visual as well. And the listing of things, I think, gives it a lot of power. It gains a kind of a litany, or gains momentum. And that's one thing about you. You have a lot of power and passion in your work. Would you say that was the oral tradition a Latin tradition?
Yeah, very much so. You know, I grew up with my grandmother, and I grew up, you know, as a kid, we used to listen to radio soap operas. And there was only one television set in the town, and you had to pay 5 cents to go and watch Tarzan and, you know, kind of like special programs. And then we were the second family to get a TV, but radio played a big role. And then also storytelling, you know, as kids, we sat around with the older folks who told tales, who told scary stories, and you know, that's kind of, and then coming from a theater background, you know, you kind of have to paint, you know, with words. So, you know, that's kind of the tradition that I come from.
Kika Aviles has been featured on NPR's Latino USA and on subway posters throughout Washington's Metro Muse. I like that a lot. Mm-hmm. He's written and performed 5 one-man shows, and we're going to hear about that. That interests me very much, and that's what he is known for internationally, I believe. Has a book out called The Immigrant Museum, and we heard the title piece from that. And another one, I think, is stacked on his lap to the tune of about 200 pages ready to go, it looks like. You write every day?
No, I don't. I have spells. I usually go, I mean, I can go for a year and a half without writing, not writing seriously. My process is very, I don't know if it's unique, but I just jot down thoughts, sometimes lines, sometimes words. Sometimes I'm driving or walking or riding the train, and a thought comes in and I just jot it down. And when I'm ready to write, I go back to all my handwritten notebooks. I type all my thoughts and ideas into a computer, and then I print them, then I cut them with scissors, I put them on the wall, and then I begin to look for connections.
I love it.
And then sometimes a line will end up being a poem, you know, a couple of lines will end up being a monologue. So I'm not a purist in that sense.
No, that is excellent advice. That is a wonderful thing to tell young people who are learning.
I come to the conclusion that nothing is disconnected from anything.
Exactly.
So that a thought that you had perhaps 2 years ago can be very well connected to an image that you just wrote down today.
And it's all from you.
Exactly.
So it's all connected. You're the source. And the organization is the trick. So I like what you say about cutting them up and putting them all so you can see them all at once. I actually have color-coded, like all the green with a crayon that might be somewhat alike, and the pink. So I love that fragmentation. See, we have that Latin blood.
Yeah.
Kika Aviles, I'm Grace Cavalieri, and we're at the Library of Congress, and we are glad. Let's hear another.
Okay, this one, I always say that ain't nobody gonna sing our song, so we might as well sing our own. And this one is a poem of praise to all of those who are bilingual. And it's called My Tongue is Divided into Two. My tongue is divided into two by virtue, coincidence, or heaven. Words jumping out of my mouth, stepping on each other, enjoying being a voice for the message, expecting conclusions. My tongue is divided into two, into heavy accent bits of confusion, into miracles and accidents, saying things that hurt the heart, drowning in a language that lives, jumps, translates. My tongue is divided by nature, by our crazy desire to triumph and conquer. This tongue is cut up into equal pieces. One wants to curse and sing out loud. The other one simply wants to ask for water. My tongue is divided into two. One side likes to party. The other one takes refuge in praying. Tongue, English of the funny sounds. Tongue, funny sounds in English. Tongue, sounds funny in English. Tongue, in funny English sounds. My tongue sometimes acts like two, and it goes crazy, not knowing which side should be speaking, which side translating. My tongue is divided into two. A border patrol runs through the middle, frisking words, asking for proper identification, checking for pronunciation. My tongue is divided into two. My tongue is divided into two. I like my tongue. It says what feels right. I like my tongue. It says what feels right.
That should be your signature poem. I love the way you punch certain consonants as you say that, because you are a performer. And I was wondering how it sounded in your own language, if you would punch the same sounds. Do you think you read it the same?
I don't know, because actually this is perhaps... See, that's the issue, is that... something has happened. I mean, I started writing in Spanish because that's my first language. But as I grew older, and I guess part of it was the need to feel that my voice was not speaking to the converted, I started writing in English, and that is the language in which I write. So there's only a few poems, and it's funny because when people in the Spanish-speaking community call me, they ask me to do stuff in Spanish, and I say, well, I only have a few poems, which is the truth, you know, in Spanish. And this one poem, My Tongue is Divided into Two, is one of the few that I've managed to translate. And it's kind of tricky because...
Translating it from English to Spanish.
To Spanish.
That's odd.
Exactly. So it's you know, I call it nostalgia in reversed. And I don't...
Do you want to do that, though, a little bit more?
I guess. I think as I grow older... You know, I think that there's a little bit more of a desire to perhaps be able to bring my work to Latin America. You know, and part of the issue is, see, when we first came here, we were a community of immigrants who did not speak the language. And it made a lot of sense to write in Spanish and to speak in Spanish to that community. But my work actually has been, you know, part of, I guess, the reason of my work has been to give a voice to the voiceless, to audiences that perhaps don't have much information. We tend to be in the English-speaking audience. And also there's been the whole aspect of you know, our community here in Washington D.C., especially Salvadoran community, doesn't have a tradition of going to performances. And like I said again, I write for performance, so my stuff gets heard at theaters. And our folks, you know, they work two jobs, and the weekend they want to go to a restaurant, they want to go to a club, you know, to dance their own music, and you know, and kind of be in touch with their culture. But it's usually pop culture, and I don't blame them for that. You know, they're very hardworking folks, so the dissemination of my work has primarily taken place in venues that are primarily attended by Americans.
That's interesting. Yeah, but you're very entertaining, so I think you could do it on any stage. And I've known you for a few years, and I kind of see you coming full circle, so that you did start as a youngster writing in Spanish. You reach now another population in English, but I can almost see you moving full circle to a bilingual text, perhaps. It's just a possibility.
I do bilingual stuff, and you know, and one of the things that I've done, you know, I guess more of, and I'm finding that it's landing very well with certain audiences. And I mean, and my point, that a point that I was trying to make, is that we're no longer that community of recently arrived immigrants that we, for the first time in our history, in the area, Central Americans, we have a generation of kids that are American. So that they speak Spanish at home, and a lot of them speak it really bad, and their first language is English. So that there is this whole Spanglish generation, you know, people that can't speak full sentences sometimes in neither language, so that resort to a kind of hybrid kind of language, and I play with that every now and then in my writing.
Kika Aviles. I'm Grace Cavalieri. We're at the Library of Congress. We're going to hear some more of his work.
I'm going to do this piece, and this is a tribute to being Latin, which I didn't know I was a Latin until I came to the United States. That word did not exist in my vocabulary. I was a Salvadorian, so when I first came here, people kept talking about going to La Latina, and La Latina was the Latino store. And kept talking about los Latinos. And I kept asking my brother and my sister, who are los Latinos? And they said, we. And I said, what do you mean, we? And so there is this introduction to this term, Latino, that never existed in my vocabulary. So this one's called Latinhood. What does it feel like inside? What color is this Latinhood? How does it do what it does? What is it that makes it happen in the way that it happens? Volatile, inquisitional, monolingual, with a yellow flower stuck in its braided hair. What language does he like to speak? Cachiquel, Spanish, Nahuatl, Creole, or English? Does he know the rules to civilized behavior, or does he tend to go at your throat when feeling threatened and cheated? What color is this Latinhood of mine? Is it black Latin, brown Latin, Indio Latin, white Latin, Latin Latin, Italian Latin via Buenos Aires, Latin with a tinge of whiteness, mestizo Latin with Korean roots? Is it straight A's, honor roll, hall of fame, welfare recipient, registered to vote, legal or illegal? Is it urinating Latin, PhD Latin, regular Latin, or Latin supreme? Is it Mexican Latin, Salvatruco Latin, Patagonia Latin, Latin with an American passport? What does it feel like inside? What does it feel like inside? Oh my God, could it be that you feel flowery, hot and spicy, Rio Grande, Bolivian Lake, FM radio in a Caracas afternoon, Colombian capital full of parades? How do you know that you're a Latin, that you're not some Russian imposter with a Peruvian accent? What the hell is this all about? Is it about yellow rice, bean soup recipes, coca plants, Garcia Marquez, tourism, bananas, inflation? Is it about being weird, different, borracho, poetic, Hispanic American with the sounds of fiestas patronales? What color did you get yours? Is it blue Chilean, yellow Asuncion, burgundy of St. Croix, purple San Jose? Who are you in this crazy web of Latins? Are you a Jimenez, an Escobar, a Maravilla, a Scapini, a Molina, a well of broken wishes? Who are you? Did I meet your mustache somewhere else? Are we related? Is it true what they're saying? That this whole thing is the simple ability to swallow the world at birth, keeping it, learning to chew at it, letting it grow inside.
You're going to want to know how to reach him, Kika Aviles. So I'm going to tell you that if you have a computer and go to www.solysoul.com, you'll track him down, and we'll do that again. You know, Kika, poetry makes things so clear. You have just made everything so clear. Instead of giving a political treatise, coming from the inside out, not knowing what the word Latin meant, that is a wonderful poem.
Thank you.
That is amazing. When people say poetry makes things difficult, quite the opposite.
Yeah, I find that out. It's helped me clarify my own self.
Yep. Clarity out of chaos. That's why we do it. Let's hear another.
Okay. This one is it's called Getting By. And I grew up in a very mixed community, Mount Pleasant, Adams Morgan, Columbia Heights. This is three sections of Washington, D.C. that are perhaps, some people say, the most culturally diverse section. I say the most culturally saturated, because there's a lot of tension also that comes with all of us from different ethnicities, nationalities, colors, living together. And there's a lot of pain and beauty in all of it. So this is, I was written just by looking at people going by on Mount Pleasant Street, and it's called Getting By. Yes, I know the baby child, drooling, crying, still not knowing the colors of rays. The woman of the sunken eyes adorning the ghetto landscape at 5 a.m. The drunken dream of many. That tender, nightly hissing sound of many languages. Yes, getting by, getting by. Yes, I know the sexy, proud, and chunky mother pushing life on a stroller, walking tall, thinking good. The twin stick-up boys, hazel eyes, matching guns. The pot dealer on a wheelchair, no legs, one arm. Yes, getting by, getting by. Yes, I know the lawyer of the lily white wingtips, fresh flowers in one hand, bottle of wine and luscious thoughts in the other. The poetic drug boys with the Remy Martin bottle, the fronting, the tears. The old lady that feeds the pigeons daily, talking with them, singing. Yes, getting by, getting by. Yes, I know the happy mistress doing her hair, shopping for steak, engulfing perfume. The pathetic retired magician, faking old tricks, dying of sadness, hiding behind sequins and glitter. Yes, getting by, getting by. Yes, I know the reluctant Anglo smile, shedding its skin and guilt, feeling Western and professional. The Afro strut in anger, eating greens, walking jazz, shooting crap, dying fast. Yes, getting by, getting by. Yes, I know the howl, the rotten dirty laughter, the playful titty, the cunning whisper, the belching horse, the wet lips of kissing. Yes, I know them all, I know them well. Getting by, getting by.
From the book, The Immigrant Museum. And that is still available. People would want to know that. And there's another book coming up. And let's hear a new one from a yet unpublished book. Maybe next year when we bring you back, it will be between covers.
I hope so. Again, I write a lot about the experience of being an immigrant. And this one is, it's about being in limbo. A lot of folks are given these temporary permits. And this one's called Status Immigranti. You go to the market, you buy everything, canned soup, toothpaste, candles to speak with God, beauty products that beautify your sadness. You make it on time to an indecisive encounter with your lover. You cry with her. You touch her skin. You kiss. You scream inside. You hide your sadness and your sorrow inside your shadow. You choose your garments, your clothes, the colors that will speak for you today. As you tie your shoes, you doubt your direction. You ask yourself if your steps are solid, certain steps. If this chosen street leads to good encounters, to dreams full of foamy waves and oceans. You are the guest at a baptism. In the middle of the party, you hold a child. You make her cry. You dance to ignore the baby tears. You say goodbye. Your shadow holds you by the hand. It quickly walks away and helps you disappear. You walk down the street looking down and finding coins. You hear the multiple translations of old stories. You regulate your accent as you walk along. You stop to look at the kindness of an ambulance picking up blood and wounds. You buy ice cream on a stick. You eat it sitting down on the steps of a church. The siren, the blood, the wounds fade away. You get your mail, official correspondence, approaching permit expiration. You worry, time goes by. You show up at the appointment. They give you a new stamp and a new date. You pay the fee required for the validation of your existence. You buy some new music. You listen to it as you iron your pants and your shirt. You sing the lyrics. You think of somebody special. You remember. You wish to return to the past. You feel things you felt before. Your shadow reappears. You buy a plant. You take it home. You talk to it. You give it a place in your days. You offer it water, light, birds, a place close to the freedom of your windows. You visit your mother. Before entering, you hide your shadow in the garden. You smile. You tell her how you're doing. You kiss her, hiding things from her, keeping your secrets, secretly wrapping them in the safety of your soul, because it's better this way. Because it's better this way. Because it's better this way.
The voice of Kika Aviles, our poet. We're at the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. Back with Kika Aviles, our poet. And one thing